There may be chaos in your life, but hey, don't worry, you're not alone. Chaos is all around you. Chaos is also a recent scientific theory to explain the complexity and randomness in the natural world. It's not an easy theory to explain, but science writer James Gleick has been doing just that. His book Chaos has captured the imagination of a wide range of scientists, meteorologists, geologists, mathematicians, as well as non-scientists. Those lay readers have helped to keep the book on the New York Times bestseller list for 25 weeks. I'd been reading the book and wanted the opportunity to explore some of the ideas of chaos with Gleick. But first, let's get a definition of chaos.
Chaos is several things. First of all, it's exactly what you think. It's disorder, it's turbulence, it's the erratic and unpredictable behavior of all sorts of complex systems, from the weather to turbulent waves in the ocean, to ripples in a stream, to the behavior of the human brain, or the arrhythmic behavior of the human heart in distress. All of those things are examples of chaos. But chaos has also become the name for a real turning point in the development of science in this century. One physicist likes to say that where particle physicists are exploring the fundamentals of matter, chaos is exploring the fundamentals of motion and coming up with a whole new vocabulary, a whole new menagerie of structures and pictures to explain just what the building blocks of motion are, the building blocks of dynamics.
Now, this seems to be a radical change in the history of science, then, because I get the sense that scientists in the past have been concerned with precision in numbers, in predictable events, and it seems that this idea of chaos means that all that's out the window.
Well, yes and no. Chaos doesn't mean that scientists aren't concerned with precision anymore, and in a sense, they're more concerned than ever with the problem of predictability. But what you're saying is exactly right, that for a long time, without even being conscious of it, many scientists concentrated on systems that were orderly, systems that behaved well, systems that didn't break down into the sort of turbulent behavior that I'm talking about. And the reason they concentrated on systems like that is the most understandable reason of all. Those systems could be dealt with. You could make calculations about simple systems, and yet often the very same systems had lurking within them the potential for chaotic behavior.
Now, what's an example of a system that is affected by chaos?
Well, in a way, the best example is the weather, because that's the system that gave chaos its first big push in the early 60s. We all know now that the weather is a chaotic system. We know it because we're smart enough not to believe anything a weather forecaster tells us about what the weather is going to be like 6 or 7 days into the future. Most of the time, the forecasters don't even bother with that. It wasn't always so. That is, people didn't always have that kind of deep-rooted suspicion. In fact, in the late 50s and 60s, there was a tremendous amount of optimism about the possibilities for weather forecasting. The reason for it was, weather obeys Newton's laws. It obeys laws of science that had been well understood for the better part of a century. So it seemed as though it was just a matter of calculation. You get the best data you can about the state of the weather right now or at any given instant, and then you do some arithmetic, and you get a new state of the weather at some time in the future, and you repeat this thing over and over again, and voila, you have a weather forecast. But it doesn't work as people hoped 20 years ago it would, and chaos is the reason.
And part of this leads to something that chaos theorists call the butterfly effect, which means that a butterfly flapping its wings in Beijing can affect the weather in New York. Is that why we're having our heat wave?
The heat wave actually may be an example of another kind of chaos in weather viewed in the longer term. The butterfly effect is exactly what you say, and it's one of those things that's almost hard to accept as literal truth. You wonder, is that just supposed to be a metaphor? But in fact, it's literally true. The tiniest disturbance in the atmosphere creates a level of uncertainty that multiplies very rapidly so that it is now known to be impossible to make a perfect deterministic weather forecast for, say, 4 weeks in the future. It's just impossible.
I want to say that in many ways it sounds almost like we're talking about a post-Monty Python. Chaos as a science sounds very Python-esque.
It does. It's hard to believe that that's really the name of a field of science, isn't it? But that's the name that it was given by a mathematician named Jim York in, I guess it was 1974 or so, and it stuck.
One of the things that's startling about this theory is that it ties together chemical reactions, wildlife populations decline and rise, electronic circuitry, the behavior of the human heart, the notion of how cells behave, all seems to come down to this very sort of simple idea that erratic behavior appears to be random but is not. And it seems very close in many ways to the world of art, where the scientific idea had once been predictability, and now we're in a world where anything can happen. It seems almost much more artistic, as if art and science are merging in some ways.
Some of the scientists who I talk to who like to speculate somewhat unscientifically about matters of this kind do think about art. A lot of people talk, for example, about the change in taste in art that we've seen in the latter part of this century, away from the Bauhaus school of architecture, very clean, simple geometric lines, away from the simple color squares of Albers, for example, toward, and this is really a return to older ideas of art in a sense, but toward more complex forms.
You've developed what seems to be a reputation as the one who is explaining the theory of chaos to the rest of the world. You've been writing on this subject for the New York Times since, I think, at least 1984, and you've written this book about it. What's the curiosity about chaos for you?
Well, I stumbled across it, as you say, in 1984 when I wrote a magazine article about a brilliant young physicist named Mitchell Feigenbaum who made some of the pioneering discoveries in chaos. And I began to realize, the more I explored this subject, how rich a subject it was. And it struck me that this was an opportunity to take a piece of scientific history in the making, talk to the participants, find out what motivated them, what uncertainties they'd faced, what their problems were, while their memories were still fresh.
Have you found these scientists who are working with chaos able to articulate to you?
Like other brilliant scientists, it's a very mixed group. I've come to the realization that a scientist's brilliance or his greatness has really nothing to do one way or the other with his ability to talk about his work in terms that a layman can understand. There are some great scientists who can do that and some great scientists who can't. And the challenge is in learning to talk to both groups of people.
Do you get letters from readers who say, I've read your book, I like the ideas, but I don't get it all?
Yes, certainly. I get that kind of letter. I get letters from readers who say, I like your book, I don't get it all, but I've always been curious about such and such a thing. It might be watching the tide come in on the beach and form pools and ripple in a certain way, and it seems to me that maybe that's an example of chaos. I love getting that kind of mail from people who are curious about the world they live in. And I love getting another kind of mail, which has really taken me by surprise, which is mail from people who studied science at one time or may have worked in science and were frustrated by the feeling that they were seeing something in their experiment, some sort of disorderly behavior. But when they reported it to the people they were supposed to be working for, they were told, no, it doesn't work that way. We know that this system can't behave in that way. That's just a little experimental error. That's just a little fluff. Don't worry about that. And some of these people have retained over periods of 10 and 20 years of frustration at being treated that way. And they've read about the new ideas of chaos and realized that there was something there all along to be explored.
James Glick is the author of the book Chaos. Last month, Glick left his job as a science writer for the New York Times to write a biography of physicist Richard Feynman. This is Fresh Air.